Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. I am exasperated. Yep, I've got it up to here. And if you could see me right now, you would see that my hand is not at like eye level or the top of my head. It's like it's as high above my head as I can make my hand go. Because my arm doesn't stretch up as far as it should because I had a shoulder injury a few months back. Actually, quite a while ago. I was playing in goal, playing 11-a-side in goal, and I made a quite spectacular save. It was brilliant. But somehow did something to my right shoulder, so it's still a bit stiff and achy, and it could be just me getting old. But anyway, I've been trying stuff, as you know, over the weeks to fix some audio issues that I've been having, and I noticed with the mixing desk that I use that there was a little bit of a problem with a couple of the faders on it. So when you put them up, they would make these crackling noises, and I thought, well, maybe that's what the problem is. Maybe that's the whole fucking thing. After everything I've tried, maybe that's what it is. So I got a new mixing desk, and I plugged it in, set it up exactly the way it should be, all the cables going into the right spots, and it just wasn't working. I was trying to connect to my guest this evening, the man from East Lore, as you'll hear a bit later on. I was trying to connect to him and just nothing was happening. It just wouldn't work. Couldn't record anything. I could hear him and he couldn't hear me, or he could hear me and I couldn't hear him. It was all crazy and annoying and what have you. But there you go. I'm gonna keep trucking on with this thing. I've gone back to the old mixing desk. Now I'm looking at the new one going, right, gotta go back to the shop with this, I guess. I don't know. I know there are worse problems in the world. I'm just saying that when you're used to things being a certain way and everything's working okay, for me it's frustration as well because I kind of know better. Whenever I try and improve something, this is true throughout my life, really. Whenever I try and improve something, it nearly always goes wrong first. Inevitably, I find a way around it or just go back to the old thing, but nothing ever fucking works the first time. I love technology and stuff, but just work. Like, I just want to plug stuff in and for it to work the way that I want it to. Are we going to get to a point where technology at some time in the future is so advanced and that we're all in tune with our smartwatches and brain implants and chips and all that kind of stuff, that when you get something, you just plug it in and you think about the way you want it to work and it just works that way? Can somebody please do that? Fucking Apple and Twitter and Facebook and Microsoft. Maybe if you put as much effort into like inventing shit as you do into like not paying tax, you fuckers, we'd all have better stuff going on and I wouldn't have these issues. But look, let's not dwell on the misery and the unhappiness, because there's still happiness to be had somewhere. Probably not necessarily in relation to Arsenal, unless, no. So probably not, but look, it's a Friday or whenever it is that you're listening to this. It's an Arscast. We're getting ready for a game against Crystal Palace this weekend. And on the show, I'm going to be chatting to the man from East Lore, as I said, but also I'm going to be chatting to Ted Knutsen, who is the founder of StatsBomb, to talk about stats and data in football. And we can see that it is having an increasing effect on the way people think about the game, the way they write about the game. And of course, it's having an effect on the way that managers and coaches and football clubs view the game, both in terms of how they play, how they scout players, how they decide to buy players. So we're going to chat about that stuff and expected goals and all that kind of jazz. That's going to be going on. What else is going to be going on? I don't know. I'm still enjoying, it's Thursday evening, I'm still enjoying the Barcelona exit from the Champions League last night. I really, really enjoyed the shit out of that. Football this season has not given us too many moments of joy, the moments of joy that we have been short-lived or wrapped in sort of taco shell of shit that the rest of the season has become. But it was really great to watch them lose. And you can say, hey, you're a small, petty man and you hold grudges. And I'll say, yes, I am. But then I don't really get the idea that we should only be able to enjoy or get joy from our own football team. You see, there are people who will say, well, what are you laughing at Barcelona for? Arsenal are shit. Okay, yeah, good. I've come to terms with that bit, but I can still laugh at them. Their faces when they didn't get that penalty. It was amazing. They couldn't believe it because that doesn't happen to Barcelona. They get the penalties. They get the penalties when they want the penalties. And in fairness, it was a penalty, which made them not getting it even more funny. And it made their exit from the competition even more funnier than funny, you see? So I'm living vicariously through the misery of others. The schadenfreude, the whole lot of it. That's where I am with this season. I don't see anything particularly joyous about where we are and what we've done and what we haven't done. So what else are you supposed to do? Can't just down tools. People need a little break. They need something to distract them from the real world. And if that means that other people's sadness and misery is my joy, well, hey, give me a great big goblet full of their misery, because I'll drink it all down, and then I'll have another, and another, and another, and probably another, and then I'll stand on a table and sing a song, and then I'll get thrown out of the misery bar, but I won't care, because I'll be drunk on their tears. So look, I'm going to get on with this first bit before I talk too much here. Give too much of myself away. So when I called up the man from East Lower a bit earlier on, I was trying to use the thing that I record the Arscast Extra with James on, didn't work, then Skype didn't work, then Skype half worked, then it was only recording in one side and wasn't recording, and then, well, I don't know, something happened. I don't even remember what, and it worked again. So let's do it. Let's chat with the man from East Lower. This only. Okay. I have some progress here. Give me a 1-2.
A 1-2.
Oh, yes. I've done it.
What exactly have you done?
I don't know.
Are we going to go back onto IP? DTTV Link Plus?
No, we're not. We're going to stay on here.
All right.
We're going to stay on here.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. Jesus. I think I should probably include this bit in the podcast.
Just what, the bit of me whistling.
Yeah, that bit.
Not that bit.
No, I think I'm going to leave this in because just to give people a taste, because I'm going to talk about this at some point in the start of the podcast. My audio
patient.
Issues. You have been very patient.
25 minutes sitting here in the dark, in my pants.
Fuck, it is 25 minutes as well. I do apologize.
In my pants. Luckily, I do have a can of beer, so that's all right.
I don't even have anything.
Well, I think we should put it on pause while you go and get something. You sound like a man tormented.
I think that's a good idea. Hang on. I'm actually going to go downstairs and get a beer. And I think I deserve it after all this. Back in like 30 seconds.
All right.
No whistling. There we go. I have a beer now.
Oh, this is good.
Yeah. So I've got audio woes as well as defensive woes and football woes.
I've got them all.
Too many woes.
Alex a woe.
Hey, Alex a woes B, yes.
He woes B.
Yeah. Any others?
Audio woe A.
Yeah, well, look, here's to you. Thank you for being so patient. Should we talk about some football now or something?
Oh, God, do we have to?
It feels like it's what we're here for. I wasn't just here to hear you whistle Phil Collins down a headset at me. I really wasn't.
You're lucky I didn't warble whistle. That's my pièce de résistance.
Oh, really? How many beers do you have to make that happen?
Oh, at least four.
At least, okay. Well, there's no danger of you slugging four beers before... All right. So, well, how are you?
I'm very well.
Excellent.
I am actually quite well.
Yeah. You know,
for a man who's been sitting here for 25 minutes.
In your pants.
My thumbs in my pants. Yeah, very well. How are you?
I am well. Yeah, I'm fine, generally speaking. I guess this is what you would consider a first world problem.
Yeah.
The issues that I've been having. But
a man wanted more knobs than he had.
Yeah.
Knobs don't work. Yeah. Problems.
Yes, they really are problems. I don't understand why technology does that to me. Why it can't just fucking work? Like you plug it all in, and it should be the same, and all the bits go in the other bits, and then there's something wrong. There's like this little bit of a high pitched noise in the background, and then when you try and connect things, why doesn't it just work?
I think that's Michael Owen you're talking about there, isn't it?
Which.
The high-pitched noise in the background.
Yeah, he's found me for making up. Actually, did you see the thing we did on Arsblog News, the wisdom of Michael Owen, the various made-up quotes that we did?
I did, yeah.
The Telegraph, in their men section, which I guess is in the lifestyle part of their website, they put together a little compilation of the weirdest and wonderfulest things that Michael Owen has said. And interspersed amongst the ones that he actually did say were quite a number of the ones that we made up. And Michael Owen, I believe, is getting quite cheesed off about this.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Well, that can only be a good thing.
Yeah. Well, we might take the hint.
Well, I shouldn't think so. No, not. Oh, well, I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it too. I doubt it too. So, look, football. How are you feeling about football?
Do you know, I almost feel like it's the summer. It's weird. I think giving up is a strong word, but I sort of switched off a bit, and it does feel a bit like the close season to me.
Mm.
Sort of one eye on it, stuff happening, and you think, oh, X has scored or X has Y has scored. But I really do. I've definitely got like only a quarter of an eye on it at the moment. It just feels like it's pretty much done. And so get on with our summer and watch a bit of cricket.
Yeah. What was the point at which you, I won't say gave up, but switched off? What was that?
My alarm bells rang at the 4-0 at Southampton just because of the nature of it and the scoreline. I mean, but that was a long time ago. And then I suppose the Swansea at home was where pretty much I could hear the nails being hammered into the coffin at that point.
The fat lady was singing at that point, wasn't she?
She'd lost her voice.
Yeah. I mean, she'd been singing all fucking season.
That was at that point I thought, basically, the season's over and I will be making acquaintance with the ticket exchange with great frequency. It was after that, really. I sort of thought, well, that's that, because I don't think it's going to happen now. I mean, obviously, the mathematical possibility is always there, and God bless maths, but... I think that was it. And then I had a few good performances since, a little, you know, upturn in terms of the way we're playing. But by and large, it feels like it's over to me. And whilst I would love to see that come back and bite me in the arse, it's not, is it?
So no.
it feels like it's done. And it's kind of the point, it's like I'm going to the game on the weekend, but I haven't been to a couple recently, and I'll go and have a bit of fun and, you know. But that's it, really. I don't really know what more to say. about you?
I'm in fucking 100% here. What can you do but kind of carry on with it? But yeah, I don't know. You're not the first person to have mentioned that. You know, this is, yeah, it's sort of, it's drifting away from them, or their interest in it is waning. I think would be a good way.
I know, and I know, you know, one person who's you know, been going 25 years and has pretty much put every single ticket on the ticket exchange since Christmas. Well, not maybe not quite since Christmas, but it's the end of Jan. And I think that kind of, whilst might not be, it might be good for the people that can't normally go, so you could look at it with a positive light. But I think a lot of people are feeling that, yeah, we've been here, we've seen it before, and it's happened again.
Mm.
And let's just kind of get on with it and just pretend it's not happening, I suppose, especially because of the nature of the what is actually happening.
Yes, but what happens then? I mean, does the summer watching cricket and sitting in your hammock drinking pina coladas, does that perform a sort of Men in Black pen trick on you? And you come back in August and go, yeah!
I always think, you know, oh, God, it's just about time to get the season over because, you know, it hasn't quite gone to plan. And then within a few days, I'm like, oh, I'm bored. You know, so I can't, come on, bring it back now. But yeah. I don't remember being... I mean, last summer, I kind of thought, yeah, FA Cup, kick on, third place, we're going to sign loads of players. And we didn't. So I don't know. I would like to... what happens this summer? I don't know, because I would like the narrative to change a little bit somehow. But a lot of it is a bit ingrained now, and I'm not sure what it would take to get people sort of peeling themselves off the pavement.
Oh, yeah, but when you say you would like the narrative to change, what does that mean? That you would like the manager to change or the manager to be changed?
I would take one or the other at the moment, if I'm honest. I mean, we've been saying it for years. I'm pretty sure I've said it about 15 times on here before. I'd love Wenger to have a change of approach and to try something a bit different. But it's not going to happen, I don't think. And I think like lots of Arsenal fans, I'm absolutely torn between my massive respect for Wenger and what he's achieved. And make no bones about it, he'll go down as, you know, pretty much the best manager in the modern era. But on the other hand, I think I'd like someone new motivation, a new approach. Yeah, I just think we need it.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to come from him, much as I, you know, hate to say it, but and I think it is time for a change. But whether that happens is one of the things that, again, most of us doubt. But I think 20 years at the top in any profession is amazing, but I think it's probably time for a change.
Yeah. But again, we come back to the issue that it's not going to happen.
Well, you say that. I mean, and you're probably right. The amount of times he says, I honour my contract, which is an admirable thing, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And all signs would point to that. But on the other hand, I occasionally think, well, how would he manage his exit? Would he just go to the end of the contract like he did last time and say, I'll talk about my contract in the summer, I'll concentrate on that, and then just not do it? I don't think he'll do what Ferguson did and announce it in advance. I really don't think that would happen. Mm. So I suppose there's a small percentage point where he might think it's time. It doesn't really feel like that's coming to me, but it's not impossible, is it, that he might say time for someone else? I think it probably isn't going to happen.
No, I don't think that's going to happen, not this summer.
No. The
end of the contract certainly might be a time, depending on how things are going at that point.
Well, that's the thing. You can only ever say what you feel at the time based on what's actually happening at the time. And that's the weird thing about it, isn't it? So it could be that things get worse or things get better and people's perceptions change slightly. But I just feel anything short of a proper title challenge this year, which hasn't really materialized, is going to leave a sour taste in people's mouths. And I'm not sure what it would take to turn a lot of Arsenal fans back towards being positive about Wenger. And that's a shame. It's really sad.
Yeah. No, it is true. I mean, it's so far gone that people are saying, or had said when we were in a reasonable position this season, that even if we won the league, they would want a new manager, which, you know, in itself is oxymoronic, the right word there. I'm not sure what it is, but you want to bring in somebody to do what the man that you want to leave just did, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I find that completely bonkers.
Yeah, but I mean, that's...
If you win the title, you deserve to stay irrespective of how you do it, because that's the big achievement.
But does that not speak to something that's really ingrained, that for all the admirable qualities there are of staying for 20 years, there is another thing that after 20 years, familiarity breeds a certain contempt, if you like.
Yeah, and that's what he's fighting against.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he's up against, and he must know it. And everything that happens every year, yes, we won 2 FA Cups, brilliant. Most teams would kill for that. Most big teams would kill for that. But the thing is, all the other things, weaknesses that sort of emerge at various points of the season and in greater or lesser degrees have happened again. And that's the thing that, you know, really, really frustrates is that it just keeps happening and nothing changes.
Mm. Yeah. And a 65-year-old leopard very rarely changes its spots.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And of course, I would love nothing more than for him to pull something, a massive rabbit out the bag, out the hat, I beg your pardon, mixing my metaphors there. But it doesn't feel likely. And I'm not sure what it would take in the summer. Let's assume he stays, because I think he will.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure what it would take to, other than three or four absolutely
top drawer
pivotal signings and a big refresh, maybe of the squad. That might signal some intent, and people go away for a few months, watch a bit of cricket, and then come back refreshed. I'm sure I'll be refreshed by then, but at the moment I'm flat about it, as I'm sure everyone else is.
Yeah, you can tell. I mean, there is a flatness to everything. I mean, I think it would take, for some people anyway, it would take Wenger sacrificing one of the players in Wicker Man or Lord of the Rings style to show that he's really serious about doing something different. You know, a pyre of some kind, some gigantic thing where there's, you know, naked dancing, a ritual, and all of a sudden one of these serial underperformers is, well, condemned to a fairly horrendous death. But
that's one way of putting it. I mean, you could just sell them. But
anyone can do that.
Yeah, I suppose so. So the naked dancing's back on the board. In which case, it makes the summer quite interesting. So
yeah.
I'm quite positive again already.
Yeah, exactly. One crispy, charred ex-Arsenal player is the guy that sparks us back into life. So, you know, we still do have, six games left?
Six for us, yeah.
Six games for us. So Palace, West Brom, Sunderland, Norwich. You're looking at those four games as, well, Arsenal should win those four games.
They should.
There's a lot of should, though. We should do a lot of things. Arsenal should do a lot of stuff and don't do it.
No, that's right. And, the last time we were at home, we thrashed Watford, and that's the kind of thing that we'd be looking for, those kind of performances. But, four thrashings at home would be great, but it wouldn't still feel unless, barring some kind of strange miracle, that won't be enough anyway.
Yeah.
So, and also then there's the kind of spectre of the Swansea at home result, which we're always capable of, just when you least want it. So, and also, who is it? Norwich, desperate, fighting for their lives. I mean, anything can happen at this stage of the season. But I would expect to get good results in all of those.
Yeah, you would.
Especially the Villa game.
It would be just the most Arsenal thing of all time.
That's my 3-point home banker, that one.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one I'm hoping for, the 3 points.
Right, you're not going to put your tickets on Ticket Exchange for that one. You're going along for the...
No, I'm not going along for that, because I think... I'm genuinely not going to that one, but that's because I'm doing something else. But it's kind of hard when you go from lap of honour to lap of appreciation to lap of weary resignation, and I'm not sure quite how they're going to pitch that one. And the marketing team will no doubt be working overdrive to sell that as an exciting...
Well, you know what they should do? You know what they should do is... If they're really serious about marketing and catching the public eye and getting in on the zeitgeist and all that, what they should do is strip all the players and get this really stern-looking nun to walk them around the pitch going, shame, shame, ringing a bell, like Game of Thrones.
And we get to throw tomatoes.
Yeah, we get to throw, tomatoes, soft fruits, I think, no pineapples.
That wouldn't get past the health and safety executive.
Yeah, I would.
Soft.
Yeah, pineapple. Could you imagine like hitting somebody in the face with a pineapple? It'd be really sore.
It would.
Yeah.
It
so
would.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that soft fruits and possibly some eggs, they drip and they do what they do. So that's where the lap is, from weary resignation to the walk of shame. I don't think anyone could argue with that. At least of all the players.
It is funny, though, isn't it? Because although they've yet again done what we expected, sort of deep down expected that they might do, the kind of notion of it being a lap of shame, we're still up there third and fourth, which is kind of, it's the classic thing, isn't it? Where you kind of talk to a lot of other fans of other clubs and you're tearing your hair out and they say, God, you're so up your own arse. You come third or fourth every year. That's brilliant. But it's there's something more to it than that, isn't it? There's the fact that you should be going higher than that, but
It's the context.
Third or fourth is exactly why Wenger's still in the job, because he still pulls that out the hat every time, and that in itself, is why he keeps his job, because he's consistent. But it's just not enough.
He needs to be more consistenter. Needs to add more consistency to his consistency.
I think it needs to be less gloopy.
A bit more viscous. Is that what you're saying?
A bit less viscous.
Less viscous and more like slime.
It's sort of sloppier, I'd say.
Right. Do you remember that stuff you used to get? Did you ever get that? You get like a tub of slime.
Was that the
kid.
Stuff that you'd stick on the wall and it would slowly roll down?
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to love that stuff.
Yeah, that was great. I remember leaving it overnight on my mother's dining room table, and it stripped whatever varnish was on the wood, and the table was never the same again.
No, did you learn your lesson? I mean, that's the main question out of this.
I never
keep doing the same thing again and again and again, hoping it would be different.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I didn't slime another table. I learned. So are you all in on Leicester?
Oh, I'd love to see him do it. I really would. I'd love to see them do it because, well, the alternative is too hard to comprehend. And apart from that, the fact we're 13 points behind, so Chelsea and Man City and Man U are behind as well, and Liverpool. It's just the most unprecedented thing, and it probably won't ever happen again. And I just think it is a breath of fresh air. For the fact they've only lost three games, they're really hard to beat. They've got three of the greatest performances of the season in their three key players. It's a story worth getting behind, even if you don't always like some of the way they do it. Mm. I'd love them to do it, but I have to say, that if I was a Leicester fan now, I'd be
shitting it.
I would, because you look at their fixtures and they're not easy, and the pressure is really going to hit. And I kind of feel there's going to be a twist. I don't know what that twist is going to be. I don't think it'll involve us. I'm being honest.
Yeah,
but I think there will be a few twists yet.
So who? Oh yeah, they've got West Ham, Swansea. So West Ham and Swansea at home, then they travel to Manchester United, then they've got Everton at home, and then Chelsea on the final day.
Those last three games are tough. And
well, West Ham is tough as well.
Yeah, yeah. And whilst they don't show any sign of buckling, and the fact that, like I said, they've only lost three times is phenomenal, it's probably not likely, but it would throw the cat amongst the pigeons. You just don't know, do you? Because they've not been in this position before. So
no,
we'll see.
Yeah, the alternative, as you say, is just it's just horrendous, isn't it?
It doesn't bear thinking about. It really doesn't. So let's just not talk about.
Let's just not talk about. Should we talk about slime or gloop or anything else?
Slime or gloop or shrinky dinks. Do you remember those? You used to get them in Shreddies packets, and you put them in the oven, and they'd sort of shrink, and you'd paint them or something.
Shrinky dinks.
Do you not remember those?
No.
Maybe I'm getting this completely wrong.
I do like Shreddies, though. They were good.
They are good. Yeah.
But I can't. I've got a thing with malt that thankfully doesn't affect me with beer. But things that are overly malty, I find they upset my stomach.
What, like whiskey?
No.
Not that one.
Not that one. Like, yeah. Different drinks with malt in them, like malty milkshakes and that kind of stuff, and Shreddies.
Yeah, Shreddies, yeah. Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Right.
I know, yeah. Up there with the best of the cereals.
I think they're good cereals because, they sort of fill you up. They're not too sugary. They've got a nice shape to them.
I think we can all get
behind Shreddies.
Yeah, that nice lattice shape is very good.
It is. It is. Next week, Weetabix. What do you think of Weetabix?
I am indifferent to Weetabix.
You've got to eat them really fast.
Do you eat them with hot milk or cold?
Cold, but if you let them go too soggy, it's gone. The moment's gone.
No, see, I can't eat Weetabix with cold milk. Just can't do it. It's always got to be hot milk.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. We've got 3 months. 3 months on cereal, you realise that?
Yeah.
4 months on cereal.
Okay. Well, I know people who used to have, like, Rice Krispies with hot milk.
Yeah, that's odd.
Yeah. I don't know where those people are now. I presume on an island somewhere.
Probably on a hot island.
Yeah. So what are you thinking then for the weekend, this game, Crystal Palace? Return to the Emirates for a good friend, Emmanuel Adebayor.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Alan Pardew.
No, him too, I guess.
Is Eddie Boyer and Shamak, presumably, is he still there? What's going on with Shamak?
The last I saw, he had really fucking terrible hair.
Well, that hasn't changed much, but I don't think he's even playing, is he? I don't think he is.
I'll look at their squad for the last game. No, he's not been there. I think he could be injured or out of favour or something. When is the last time he's played? Oh, it's been a long time. There's people like Connor Wickham playing, and he's not playing. I'm going back to January here. Yeah, he played in January at some point in the FA Cup.
Okay, well, I mean, I think given that they're in the FA Cup the week after, and we've got nothing to play for, all signs lead to 3 points, because they're probably going to want to, they've got one eye on that, right?
Yeah, they're going to do like a Watford.
Yeah, I think we can safely say that that we've got a good chance of winning on Sunday. I think they're out of the danger zone in the Premier League. They've got FA Cup semi-final.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, you've got to say that we should get that 3 points at that one.
They're 11 points clear of the relegation zone. So yeah, chances are they're not going down. Yeah, right. Okay, well, look, we'll hope that we can have a slimy, gloopy, not-so-viscous win on Sunday and see where the rest of this flat season takes us.
where do you think we'll end up?
Third, maybe? Man City only 2 points behind us.
Would you consider, if we come third, I know we won't win the FA Cup this year, but if we come third, which is consistent, do you consider it a failure? A season that's where we've regressed?
Yeah.
I think you'd have to say that, wouldn't you, given some of the players have had very poor seasons. One or two bright sparks, don't get me wrong, but
it's weird. I mean, you look at who scored the most goals. We've scored 55 goals. Tottenham have scored 60. Man City have scored 58, and Leicester have scored 57.
So we're not doing too badly.
So we're not doing too badly in the goal score, even though we could easily have scored many more goals. And in terms of goals against, Leicester have got 31, Tottenham 25, Arsenal 33, Man City 33, Man United 30. You know, so we're not any worse really than anyone else. We're just kind of worse than ourselves, if that makes any kind of sense.
Yeah, it feels like we haven't really gone anywhere. You know, it was a bright period mixed with cloud and rain. I mean, it really does feel like it's gone all over the place this season. And it's been some great early football and some quite exciting late football. But a lot of the stuff that we've watched, even if we've been winning, it's been quite hard to watch, I've found. You know, not exciting.
No.
Not the kind of stuff that gets you going. And so it's been a really odd season.
It feels like, in a way, that we're sort of running up a down escalator.
Yeah, I suppose. It does a bit, where we've worked very hard to get average results at times.
Yeah. And then we go...
Yeah, exactly. And then
you know, we're running to stand still at times, I guess.
Yeah, it is odd. It's been a very odd season, and you can really... you can see why the pressure's on Wenger more than it ever has been, really, just because so much is not quite right.
Mm.
But frustratingly, so much is also not quite wrong. You think you should be doing a lot better with this squad, and if only you did this, and if only, you know, it's frustrating, isn't it? But
I
think we'll come third or fourth as well.
Yeah.
And there you go.
And there we go. We pick it up from next season.
Exactly.
Do it all again.
Exactly. I think an early signing, preferably around the time that they ask us to cough up for our season tickets, would be... I think, you know, it would be nice.
When's that? That's in May, though, isn't it?
They usually send it out roughly about 2.5 seconds after the final whistle. Or maybe a bit before. No, it's pretty prompt, because they always ask you to pay it by the end of May.
Yeah. Well, you know it's coming.
I do. And the funny thing is, you know, some people have said, I'll give up my season. No one. I would never give my season ticket up, because I like going too much. I like going with my mates, and I'm sure... you know, it's the social side that keeps you going when the football's not been brilliant.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't consider giving it up. But at the same time, I've definitely had one eye more on the meeting my mates than on the football.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
For sure.
I hear you. Well, look, maybe we'll have an end-of-season roundtable, Jobby, and see where we all are and how we all feel about it. But for now, my beer is empty. I'm going to go get another one and try and fuck up my audio even more.
Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Need to come with some kind of a misery warning. It wasn't too bad, was it?
No, I think it was okay, apart from your whistling. You don't need that. Thanks, man.
All right, you're welcome.
Thank you very much indeed to the man from East Lower. You can find him at East Lower on Twitter or on his blog, eastlower.co.uk. We're going to come back, talk stats, data and more right after some news.
Arsenal Football Club have today denied that their social media team is out of touch with fans. After the disappointing 3-3 draw with West Ham at the weekend, the official Twitter account tweeted, "Balloons! Look at these balloons! Everybody loves balloons!" Chairman Sir Chips Keswick said,
"Ein Untreuer, mate, is for cans."
The club also refused to comment on Dick Law's Snapchat ghoulie pictures.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. Now, unless you've been living under a rock or in a cave somewhere, you'll have noticed that stats and data are playing an increasing part of the football story for all of us, whether you've got the StatsZone app on your Android phone or your iPhone. You can get all the stats during games and after games. There are people who are crunching data, and of course, data and stats are being used by football clubs in various ways. So I'm delighted to welcome to the show to chat a bit about this, Ted Knutsen. Ted, you started or you founded the website. Website Stats Bomb.
Yeah, that's right.
So look, let's talk about your background a little bit and what it was that made you fill this particular niche, because when it comes to football writing and football blogging, you know, we found different niches that have filled down the years, whether it's a specific club or you look at what Michael Cox did in terms of tactics and zonal marking. What was it that drove you towards this side of things?
For about a decade, I worked in professional gambling. I had a lot of different roles at PinnacleSports.com, which is like one of the big internet bookies.
Right.
And I was lead trader for the English Premier League. And back at the end of 2012, I was diagnosed with cancer and I had to undergo surgery and then chemo, and I couldn't work. And at that point, I was like kind of going crazy because I get really bored and I didn't want to play any games, et cetera, et cetera. So I needed something to take my mind off of it. Mm. And I'd work on some baseball modeling and followed the baseball stats movement for a decade at that point. And I was like, well, there's finally some information available on soccer. And I'd wanted to do it since 2005, I think, but right. We just never had public data to look at it. So I started poking around, and obviously I'm an Arsenal fan, and I started looking at them and Barcelona and the different leagues. And
got terrified immediately by what you saw about Arsenal, I'm sure.
Sometimes frustrated, but also like the transfer stuff. I wanted to take a look ahead of time at the rumors and say, you know, does this guy look like he's any good, or does this guy look like, you know, he's crap or whatever?
Right.
You kind of get the sniffer dog out and see if it makes any sense. So that's what I did. And at the time, there wasn't really anything that collected a lot of the stats writing. So I founded the site with a guy named Ben Pugsley, and Colin Trainer came along shortly afterwards. Those guys have had a little bit of jobs in and around football, though I can't tell you where they work because it's top secret.
Sure, no problem.
Then in 2014, I was at lunch with somebody just meeting up and chatting, and the owner of Brentford came across the street, and we hit it off. We disliked some of the same people in the gambling community, so that's always a good thing. You're like, no, I really hate that guy. He's like, oh, that guy's a prick. You're like, yeah, okay, cool. And he's like, hey, I want to hire you. And I'm like, I'm just here for lunch, but we should talk.
Okay, so well, let's just go back a little bit, because what you were looking at, for example, when you were saying, okay, here's a guy that's linked with Arsenal, here's a signing that's linked with Arsenal, you sort of created your own models to look at what they were doing and how productively they were doing it. Is that that's more or less it?
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the biggest hitting – I was looking back at the website today. One of the biggest hitting things that I wrote back when I was public – I'm, again, public at the moment – was looking at Arsenal forwards in, like, January of 2014.
Okay.
And on that list were guys like Lacazette, Julian Draxler when he played some central stuff, Boubacar, who went to Porto, and Antoine Griezmann. I thought, you know, like he's not directly a center forward, but he's been playing a lot of forward minutes. And obviously, as you saw last night on the Champions League, he turned out to be pretty good.
He's quite good, that guy, yeah. So, okay, so look, you're doing those and you're putting those models together and you're doing them in a sort of an understandable way in graphic terms that people can see these various qualities or attributes that players have, and so they fill out certain things that they're good at, and then they're short on other things. So is that what, did the guy from Brentford know that this is what you were doing?
A little bit. One of the frustrations that they had had was, you know, they'd been to all these conferences and talked to all these people, and everything's the same, right? You can do it like Udinese do, have tons of scouts everywhere. You just have to do it better, or do it bigger, or do it this way. You're like, man. Yeah. You know, it's little old Brentford, and they had just bought Michelin at the time. Like, they can't do it bigger and better. That's basically impossible for their budget. But he had worked in gambling for a long time, and has a degree from Oxford in maths or something. So, like, the way that I was approaching it seemed really interesting.
So what was your remit there? Was it to assess players that were on lists that they were interested in and see if they fit within what the manager wanted or what the team was lacking?
I kind of had a big unformed job that I kind of filled out myself to some extent. Half of it was recruitment. So like that, or, you know, you get a name from an agent, you get a name from an ex-coach or an ex-player who says, hey, this guy's really good.
Yeah.
You should take a look at him. And so we did that, and we turned through, I don't know, over 1,000 players in a year based off of the stats. You're able to do it much faster in that way. Basically, not finding the best players quickly, but usually sorting out the crap. Like, there's so many bad players that get sent to clubs, and if you have to watch every one of those, it takes a long time.
Yeah.
But occasionally, you're like sifting for gold, you're panning there, and occasionally you're like, oh wow, this guy might actually be really good, let's take a look at him.
Right.
So that was half of my job. And then like 25% of my job was sort of building better tools and metrics and finding ways to analyze our own teams and opposition scouting. And then another 25% is literally just sort of research, better ways to play the game, how can we find competitive advantages, you know, how can we play better football, essentially, or maybe find coaches that play better football.
Right, so you're using the data to shape the way that a football team plays.
Yeah, potentially, or just give advice.
Like, right.
That's really what I did. I didn't shape it. I said, hey, this might be a good idea.
Right. Can you give me an example of one of those?
Certainly. And this actually segues into Arsenal's type stuff. I was looking. I knew about Steve Bould, and Arsenal's people talk very highly of Steve Bould. But it was kind of a thing of, you know, what does he do? You never know what the assistant coaches do unless you get like these big profiles, and most clubs don't want to talk about it. And obviously, we know that Bouldy's a defender. And I was like, okay, well, what changed? Like, you know, thinking that he might have come over and taken over the defense. So it's really interesting. I cut the data for the 2011-2012 season, which is the last one before Bould was involved at all.
Mm.
And then I was looking at this year and the past year. And you see their defensive profile change a bit. It looks like they're doing a lot more sort of deep block type stuff and a bit less pressing up the pitch. So, you know, they'll drop off and you see teams and you see the output in how teams shoot against them. So you see, nowadays, you see a lot more shots from outside the box against Arsenal, but much less penetration and shots right on top of the goal. And that it's sort of a way of gaming the expected goals. If you force your opponent to consistently take worse shots from afar, even if they're taking you know, more shots overall, and I think technically it's about 20% more per game this season, the quality, it dropped off tremendously. So it's like, you know, 40% were shot on average. I know it's maths, it's boring.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, what you're trying to do is say, okay, does this give a better chance to win consistently? And the answer is probably yes. It means that Arsenal are, you know, I think that season they gave up something insane, like 49 goals. This year, they're on pace for maybe 40, depending on what the next couple of games go like.
Right.
Well, but it could be as low as, you know, 35, 36, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting because when you talk about that sort of stuff and the way that that might be a deliberate strategy from the team, how much of it could also be you looking at that data and then applying something in retrospect to it that makes sense?
Oh, it certainly could be reading into it. But
right.
I also know people actually at Arsenal, so
sure.
It's not just reading into it. Like, you get some context around it, and
okay.
Sometimes it's just like doing the data stuff is a bit like a pirate treasure map. Like, sometimes you go searching for treasure, and your ship, you know, crashes on the rocks. Sometimes you go and it's just literally a case of fish that was buried somewhere and someone came back to it. But a lot of times it's like, oh, this is really interesting. Let's dig into it. It could be player-wise. It could be funky stuff like, you know, what's this team doing that seems to make them a lot better than they used to be a couple of years ago?
So you talked about expected goals, and people who've watched Arsene Wenger's interviews this season, the people who haven't just turned off in frustration after our defence. I don't know what model you might apply to the defence over the course of this season. Probably like a broken action man or something. I don't know. But he has referenced expected goals. Can you explain just a little bit to me and maybe to listeners what expected goals are and how that might then influence the way that a manager A, views his team, or B, sets his team up to play either offensively or defensively?
Okay. So if you take away the words expected goals, because that's slightly confusing, there are two other ways that you could talk about it. One of them is goal probability, which also sounds like, you know, don't touch me, I'm math, I'm scary. The other one would be shot quality. You want to take higher quality shots.
Right.
And we know that distance has a big factor. So the further you are away from a goal, the harder it is to score. Easy, simple.
Yeah.
Also, the wider you are, the easier it is for keepers to make saves because there's less of the goal to hit or you have less to shoot at.
Sure.
So that's a big factor. Two other factors are headers versus feet. Headers are scored at about half the rate across the same distance or as feet. It's harder to hit a ball with your head. You know that.
Sure.
And then the last one is crosses. Crosses are fairly inefficient, and even foot shots off of crosses are less likely to be goals than, you know, one that a guy controlled ahead of time and then shot.
So you mean like first time finishes?
Yeah, pretty much. Regardless of how you slice it, it's just a cross is much more complicated to hit because you have to redirect it from the side to go forward.
Okay.
So like when you think about it in terms of how you play football, you're like, all right, that makes some sense. And then when you crunch it across like thousands and thousands, we're probably at like a million shots in the whole database, you start to get the concept to say, okay, this shot from this location with these things attached to it, whether it's a cross or a completed dribble or a through ball, is this likely to go in the goal?
Mm.
One of Wenger's huge frustrations this year is that for the first time in a very long time, all of his forwards, except for I think Giroud, are underperforming hugely in terms of their goal expectation. So everyone would say if they took all these shots another 1,000 times, they probably would have scored another 15 goals this season.
Okay.
And obviously 15 goals has a big impact in the final table and your ability to win games.
Sure. It's a difficult one to kind of get your head around in a way because you're going, okay, well, if you had another 1,000 times to take those shots or took another 1,000 shots, you'd score X amount more goals. How do you find the balance between, okay, this is what we know from this data, but this is human error or human frailty to a certain extent, or outside factors like pressure or the importance or the moment in a game when it happens where it might be just the pressure might be too much for a guy.
Yeah, and like it's very difficult to put that in a model. Like a model is a snapshot of reality, but it's not correct because it doesn't have everything in it. And it never will.
Mm.
What we found is that by including things like this, you're able to get more correct data than you would just by having approximations and guesses. And, you know, sometimes I watch a game live, especially in a stadium, and I'm like, you know, I don't think that we played that well that half. But like, you know, you get caught up in the moment or you don't see everything because you're sort of from afar. But then I go back and I look at it and I'm like, wow, we actually had a couple of really good chances that I kind of forgot about. But you go back and you watch it and you see it. So it's trying to give you just a little more objective information. Now, Arsenal are able to recruit from all over the world, and they would want to find the best possible players. Like Elneny is someone no one had looked at, and I'm pretty connected to a lot of different scouting organizations, and like, you know, I'd never even heard of this guy, and that's telling you sort of how far afield they went. Arsenal they bought StatDNA.
Yeah.
A few years ago, they have one of the best analytics groups in the world. And I'm not saying this, you know, just because I know the people. Like, I respected them well before I ever met them. They also have a pretty big head start. They have their own proprietary data that they collect. And so they're doing more. And if you look at who Arsenal have bought, like, their transfers are pretty good. The question is always, you know, how much does Wenger control? Could they potentially have better tactical elements, or could they have slightly better training? You know, and that's... It's not really for me to say, but if you look at the stuff we know happens from the analytics side, you can say the transfers actually we bought have been pretty good. And then, you know, what happens behind the scenes, you never quite know.
Like, yeah, of course. And it's not necessarily, I think people would have issues with the frequency of the players that are bought, or perhaps not enough players being bought. But Arsenal are, you know, Arsenal are using StatDNA and using their own proprietary data and software to identify targets based on what? So, for example, Arsene Wenger will say, we need a midfielder who is tidy on the ball, whose passing stats are X, who can run all day long, or whose, you know, stamina brings something different to the midfield. Go and find me those players in these leagues based on that information. Is that sort of where the way it would work?
Yeah, that's probably what it is. Like, he describes what he wants, and then they quantify that into some sort of, you know, set of numbers that they're able to look up, and then there you go. Mm. And what they probably then do is break it down into, these are the top 10 targets. Let's have scouting, you know, take a really close look at it.
Yeah.
And then, like, the scouting gets involved, and then, you know, the best of those get sent to the coaches, likely.
And how close are we? I mean, there was an article this week that you did with Raphael Honigstein, and he's talking about Pep Guardiola shaking his head at Bastian Schweinsteiger because he took a couple of shots from distance, which, as you explained already, you shoot from distance, you're less likely to score. I mean, it's self-evident in a way. But is that beginning to shape, or is it now shaping the way that coaches instruct their teams?
It's certainly shaping some of them. And some of them, it's not, like, obvious in that they don't say, hey, you have to take better shots all the time. Sometimes they're constructing training sessions where this is the goal, and you can't shoot from outside of it. So they're basically trying to find ways to penetrate inside the box. And if you look at Arsenal, they have a lot of really good movement inside the box, and that's something that's been a Wenger trademark for a really long time. Our defense often fluctuates, but usually our attack has been very good. And it's kind of funny, there was a stat that was quoted earlier this year, and it was quoted as a negative. Arsenal have the fewest goals from outside the box in the Premier League. That's by design. That's actually a good thing, because they're not taking shots from outside the box, and so they don't score those. You know, if they scored a couple more, that it might be useful, obviously, but it'd be nice if, you know, Ramsey and Alexis and Ozil and Theo hadn't all just crap themselves when they're in the box sometimes, right?
Yeah.
That was the biggest possible frustration with Gervinho. That guy was able to get free in the box so many times, and he was so bad at finishing.
Yeah, he was a frustrating player, all right. I'm going to move on very swiftly from that before I start having flashbacks. In the piece he did with Honigstein, there's a very interesting stat about Aubameyang, who I know that you, a couple of years ago, were talking about him as a guy who could potentially, and I think that's a really important word, is potentially, that the numbers showed that he could be a guy who could develop into something a bit special or a bit different. And that has been the case. But even this season, under a new manager at Dortmund, he's become more effective again. Can you just sort of explain why that is?
So back in, I think, 2013, the summer of, I started poking around the data, and I saw this French kid who he's really fast, and he scored a lot of goals in France. And you're like, all right, well, you know, the thing with players for most clubs anyway, except for the super rich, is that, you know, you're looking for value, and Wenger has always looked for value as well. So you're like, okay, this guy looks like he could potentially be quite good. You never know how they're going to transition in leagues, and does he fit your particular style, etc. Mm. But, you know, I think they paid maybe 13 million euros for him. So at that point, you're like, well, maybe we just roll the dice. You know, the Dortmund people would say that when he came there initially, he was a wide forward, and part of that was because they had Lewandowski, and obviously you're not going to just displace Lewandowski. But he did fine as a wide forward. And then last year, he got moved central, I think through part of half of the year anyway. And he was doing okay, but not great. And then, so full disclosure, the owner of Brentford talked to Thomas Tuchel a lot while he was on his essentially sabbatical year.
Right.
And some of the concepts that I talk about, you know, went directly to Tuchel. So you see that basically Lewandowski looks like a center forward. He gets a ton of shots centrally. Aubameyang looked very different. He looked like he got a lot of through balls. He'd get things with his pace, but he wasn't necessarily getting all of these great chances in the center of the box, which meant that he wasn't scoring potentially as many goals as he could have. Under Tuchel, you just see completely change, and he's always in the center of the box, and he gets a ton of shots, and he looks like one of the best center forwards in the world. And part of that's a tactical adjustment. Part of it's probably a coaching adjustment, and part of it might just be him getting more used to playing centrally in Bundesliga. you're never going to have all the information. You're just trying to make slightly better decisions as you go.
Like a whole new world. Sometimes it's difficult, isn't it? Because people will say, well, stats don't tell you everything. But nobody ever claims that they did. And I have to say that, you know, I'm with you sometimes when I'm watching a game and then I have to go back and I have to do something like player ratings, and you've got a perception in your mind of how a player has played, or what sticks in your mind perhaps are the three passes that didn't go to where they were going to go, but the 52 other passes that went exactly where they were going to go. You forget about those and you see, well, he's only misplaced three or four passes in the entire game. So having the stats afterwards with a bit of distance and with a bit of hindsight, it does sort of change your perception of what you've seen, or your first impression of it anyway.
Yeah, Mesut Ozil is the classic example, right? Like, he played on some Arsenal teams that didn't necessarily have the best forwards early on.
Yeah, and that's still the case, by the way.
Well, yeah, fair enough. I really like Welbeck.
What do the numbers tell you about Welbeck?
So Welbeck's very interesting in that, like, he's had a couple of up and down years, and last year you would have looked at him and said, man, he's incredibly unlucky. But like everybody else looked at him and said he's been terrible, which is, both of these things are true, right? But a lot of times we found that, you know, getting in position to have the shot, even if you don't always score it, means that you're actually, you know, you're doing the right thing.
Right.
So Welbs being there, you know, you look at him, you're like, he's got all of the tools. Sometimes he just has to turn it on. And he had a couple of years at United where you saw it start to click. And I think now he's just fine. And I like him a lot. But Ozil, you know, when he's setting up forwards that aren't scoring, he's not getting assists and it's not very impressive. But like, he's still doing his job, and that's a great thing because he's one of the very few people in the world that are capable of doing these things. So like, you know, it's the stats that give us indicators. It's not just goals and assists. It's about setting up shots. It's about, you know, making tackles like Coquelin does.
Yeah.
Every player has limitations to them. There are very few Lionel Messi and Ronaldo's. But, you know, when you combine them together, hopefully with some objective information, you can build a better roster than you might otherwise.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting to look back at Ozil and chances created. And I know not every chance is a chance that somebody should score from, because that's not the way it works. But when you look at the amount of chances he has created and the amount of goals that have been scored from those chances, greater efficiency from Arsenal's forwards would certainly have made a big difference this season. So.
Yeah, he'd probably be romping the assist record right now as opposed to just poised to break it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Anyway, listen, it's fascinating stuff. Ted, thanks a million for coming on. The website is statsbomb.com.
Yep, and I'm a very long-time fan. Happy to be here. Thanks a lot for inviting me on.
Great stuff. Thanks, man.
Bye.
You can find Ted on Twitter at MixedNuts or MixedKunuts. It's mixed and then KNUTS. So follow him on there for all the statsy goodness and bomby goodness, or go to statsbomb.com and check out all the stuff that they're doing on there. So, Crystal Palace on Sunday. Don't have any team news yet, even though it's after 9 o'clock on Thursday night. My audio issues, my trying to improve my life and trying to improve things ultimately for you. Not that I'm blaming you in any way. I'm just saying that I was just trying to make it better for you guys. But anyway, I haven't been able to watch even any of Liverpool and Dortmund. I think Dortmund are winning. It's halftime at the moment. 2-0 to Dortmund. So it looks like they're going to go through. But But we don't have anything on the team for Sunday. Who knows who will be fit or who won't be fit. All I know is that... what do I know? I don't think I know anything. I'm just saying that 2-0 up against West Ham, and then, you know, so if we're 6 or 7-0 up against Palace on Sunday, I will start to relax and believe that this is a game that we can win. What it means in the grand scheme of things or in the course of our season remains to be seen, of course. 6 games left, the 4 games that we were talking about with the man from East Lower, that you should expect Arsenal to win. But what you should expect Arsenal to win and what they actually do are very often different things. Very often, too often, far too often. But look, we'll do it. It's Sunday. It's a game. It's 4 o'clock. And that's it. Nothing else to it. Just going to, like, have a weekend, I guess. Hope you have a nice weekend. Do nice things with nice people. Maybe in nice places. I don't know. And James and I will be here on Monday. We will have an Arsecast extra for you on Monday when we look back at whatever the hell happens against Crystal Palace and Ali Bayor and all that kind of crack. So join us then. Please do join us then. It's a pleasure as always to have you along. I'll catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye. Hello, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, can you hear me? Hello? Hello? 1, 2, 1, 2, hello? Hello? Fuck. Fuck. Why did I do this? Hello, 1, 2, 1, 2. Hello, hello, hello? No, fucking. Hello? 1, 2. Oh, fuck.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.